Hello, this is Under Our Roof. Today you have just me, Lizzie or Elizabeth, and I have a sleeping baby, and Grace is in the studio recording this week. So I'm going to try to just bang this out. No intro music, don't want to waste any time. Let's get into it, as the TikTokers say. I feel like I haven't done one of these in a couple weeks. I kind of got out of my groove. I felt like in theory, Grace and I would have been able to maybe pre-batch some, but as I'm sure you can imagine, we're just flying by the seat of our pants sometimes because we're still in the first few months of having a new baby, and we're in this weird place because I'm on maternity leave, and because of that, Grace is taking advantage of me being able to be home full-time to do a ton of work outside of the home, and I'm really glad that we've structured it that way. I think it makes so much sense, and I love being home with Francis. But there's also just a lot less free time. And sometimes, to be totally honest, I feel like a little fried by the end of the day. So even if I technically have time to sit down and record a podcast, I'm kind of depleted. And I just want to like read my Kindle or eat ice cream in bed and you'll catch up with Grace. You know, if we do overlap, some nights Grace doesn't get home till like 10 and I'm pretty wiped out and Francis is already asleep. But if Grace gets home a little earlier, then like we'll catch up. And yeah, we just haven't done podcasts. I have missed it. I feel like it's been a 2-week break, I think. And I think this is the longest break we've ever taken since starting the podcast in October 2020. So it feels weird to not do it. And I'm happy to be back recording a little something. So a couple weeks ago, I asked for ideas for solo podcasts. And I didn't really know what to expect, but I got such thoughtful, kind ideas that also just made me realize how much people have been listening for a while, because some of the ideas only they would have only thought of that or said that if they had been listening a while, because it related back to something that we said a long time ago in the podcast or like a more niche subject that we don't talk about that much. So I thought that the questions were really thoughtful, and I thought about just doing like a question and answer type podcast because I got enough questions, or I got enough topics that were really framed as questions that I basically could have just like bounced through a lot of them. But I'm for now going to focus on maybe the number one most asked topic or the most requested topic for a solo podcast, which really surprised me. And it was my law school journey and my legal career. I'm so surprised that people want to hear about that. It's something that I rarely talk about. I guess on the day-to-day podcast with Grace, we do bring it up occasionally because Grace will, you know, reference like, oh, you're a lawyer. What do you think about this? Or it'll just come up. We'll talk about, you know, things we're proud of. I'll talk about getting into law school. And so we have talked about it, but it's just not something that seems that interesting to me, to be honest. I mean, as I'll get into, I really do like the field that I'm in, and I've had a very rewarding career in a lot of ways, but I guess I just didn't think it'd be that interesting to other people that aren't in that field. So I was surprised and flattered. It's interesting to know that people would want to hear about your job, because I feel like a lot of people, there's kind of the joke of like, you don't really know what any of your friends do, or even, I don't even know what my spouse does kind of joke. Where people will say like, it's been too long now and I feel like I can't go back and ask my friend what they do for work because I don't understand it. People that are in like advertising or HR, I feel like a lot of people have a job like that and I don't know what they do. And so it's very sweet that people want to know what I do. That's very kind. And you probably are curious, like if you're curious about the legal career, you might wonder, what do you do all day? So I'll get into that. A disclaimer is that I'm not going to really talk about super specifics because I just think that's what's most appropriate for this field. I feel like it's kind of an unwritten, or in some cases a written rule, that you just don't divulge a lot of things about. Obviously, there's client confidentiality for one thing, which I would of course not go anywhere near that on a podcast, but even just like where specifically I work, if you really want to know these things, you can go to my LinkedIn. Probably, I think it's public, and see where I have worked. And I don't have a single bad thing to say on the podcast about anywhere I've worked. So it's not going to be like, look up the dirt. But I guess all I'm saying is I'm not going to name names. This isn't what that's for. It's more if somebody's curious about the path of my career and school and everything, here's what I would say. And I'll give a few words of advice too in terms of going to law school. I guess I'm surprised how many people are somewhat interested because I don't have a lot of friends outside of the friends I've made through law school and my legal career who are lawyers. I do have some, but for the most part, I feel like most of my best friends did not go to law school, are in totally different fields than me. In my friend group in LA, I'm like the only person. I mean, my main friend group, which is a lot of friends from college. Of course, I have other groups, including groups of lawyers, but it's like the people that I see every week, pretty much. Like, I'm the only lawyer. So anyway, that's a bit of a rambling intro, but now I really will get into it. I went to law school 8 years ago. I graduated 8 years ago. I started law school over 10 years ago, which is very weird to me now. It feels like super recent, but it's been a while. So things have changed, I think, with admissions and recruiting and the way it all works, but I'm sure the general structure and the basics have not, which is that, I applied while I was still in college. A lot of people apply later. It was actually somewhat uncommon, especially at my school, to go straight from college to law school. A lot of schools want you to take some time off. And I also think that with getting a job for after school, it is helpful. That's not to discourage anyone that wants to go straight from college to law school. That's what I did. And it worked out fine. But there's also no worries if you take time in between. I know people that took 10 years in between, or maybe even longer. I mean, there are certainly people that have taken longer, but me personally, I at least know people that have taken about 10 years between college and law school. I would say a couple years is pretty common. And of course, yes, people go straight through like I did. But I applied while I was still in college, and you know, you need the basics. You need a letter of recommendation. You need to take the LSAT. I think, I'm pretty sure you still do. I know standardized testing in general has gone through a huge overhaul in the last decade, I want to say. I think some schools have moved away from needing standardized testing. Some colleges don't require that you take the SAT or the ACT or whatever it is now. But I think you still have to take the LSAT to go to law school, I'm assuming. So I did that, and that was the biggest piece, I would say, of my law school acceptance journey. Of course, like, the grades that you get in school matter, and the recommendations you can get and the personal essay, those are all important. But I felt like the LSAT was the biggest piece that I could control almost. So I took a, class. I think it was a Kaplan prep class. I think it was Kaplan. It's been a while now, but I took a prep class. I studied. I went to the public library and took a practice LSAT every single day for a couple months. And I ended up doing well in the LSAT and got into my dream school, which was Berkeley. And the rest was history, sort of. But it was a really good experience. I think that was a lot of what people asked is like, are you happy you went to law school? Tell us about your law school experience. And I'm super happy I went to law school. I started in fall 2013. So yeah, things were different, like I said. Things have changed, I feel like. And probably the pandemic changed the way that schools do things. And just the world has changed a lot. Like, social media is a lot more prevalent than it was back then. And I wonder how all of that would have affected my law school experience. Because this was kind of like not pre-Instagram, but almost. And it was just a bit of a different time, but I had the best time. I met the coolest people. I loved my law school class. I felt like a lot of us got really close. I'm still good friends with a lot of people. A friend of mine just came up from San Diego to meet Francis a week ago, who I met in law school. I met her like one of the very first days of law school. And I just feel like there's a real common interest, people that want to think about things deeply and enjoy reading and writing. I think I've said that before when people have asked about whether they should go to law school. I think I've said, like, you should enjoy reading and writing because those are big, big parts of being a lawyer. I have joked about how I'm so bad at math, but it's true. I am terrible at math. And that was my ticket to be able to do a career that involved no math. And it doesn't, although occasionally I'll be like calculating a settlement amount or something. And, you know, we'll agree on, okay, we're going to settle this, but we're going to give them 25% we're going to, our next settlement offer will be 25% lower or less than what they asked for. I don't know, something like that. And I'll have to use a calculator. But aside from a little question like that, I will not do math in my job. So yeah, I went to school with other sort of like-minded people. I mean, not overly like-minded. There's a lot of different viewpoints, but I enjoyed that a lot. I love school in general, and just being in a college town and on a campus, I think is really fun. There's like always something going on. There's usually good food, a variety of budgets for different things to do, because a lot of people are on a student budget, and I certainly was. I did not have a car in law school. I was working a little bit in law school just as a teaching assistant to honestly to have extra money to go visit Grace, because Grace lived in LA at the time and I was up in Northern California. So it's, I'm very nostalgic for that time. Like, I did not have a lot of extra money at all. I was scraping by and like living the dream, and it just was so fun. I like really learned how to cook super well for myself. I lived by myself for the first time, and really one of the only times. I lived by myself for a year after law school as well, but the only time I've ever lived alone and like really had my own place was for the 3 years during law school and then 1 year after. And it was a real highlight of my life. It was hard. I remember the first semester of law school being the hardest by far. Like, it was night and day the hardest. There were times that I was like, I can't do this. I'm staying up all hours trying to, you know, figure out this case. And you just, there's a steep learning curve at the beginning, the way that you're expected to like read case law and outline cases. So basically what you do in law school is like every night you have assignments of cases to read in your textbooks. And by cases, I guess I mean, that's sort of like colloquially you would say read this case, but it's reading a court opinion that's been written. So when a court makes a decision, they write an opinion, which is like a statement basically, and it can be anywhere from a couple pages long to many dozens of pages long. And there's a lot of important case law that has basically affected the outcome of the way that the law works in the United States. So you think about like Supreme Court cases that come out and they change the law. So like there was recently a Supreme Court case that came out that narrowed what copyright fair use means. So now copyright fair use has a totally different meaning under the law. And there's cases like that all the time. So you hear about especially the Supreme Court cases, but then there's all kinds of cases all, you know, from all different levels of courts. And then there's federal courts and state courts. A lot of the time in law school, you're reading either federal or the state that you're in. So we read a good amount of like California Supreme Court cases. And you read the case law that makes up the laws of the U.S. You study like the actual statutes a lot less than case law. And you basically read them and then you have a discussion about them. And in law school in general, there's like no homework. There's not really pop quizzes. I'm sorry, there is no homework that you like turn in. There is homework in the sense of there's a lot of reading that you're supposed to do and to be prepared to discuss. And then most classes have, at least they did back then, participation is part of your grade. And you can also be cold called. I feel like that's the thing that people talk about in movies and stuff, like in Legally Blonde and I'm sure other movies, is this never happened in college. I'm sure there's some teachers that do it in college too, but it's called the Socratic method or cold calling, which is, you know, a teacher will just look at their role because they usually don't know everyone's name if it's a big class, but they might learn everyone's name. But they'll look at their roll sheet and they'll say, Elizabeth, what did you think the holding of the case was? Or something like that. I mean, that's kind of basic, but they'll ask you questions about the case. And you have to be prepared. And you can say pass. People did it. They're not going to say, you know, you have to say something, even if it's idiotic. You can say, I'm sorry, I need to pass, or, you know, I'm not feeling prepared. It's kind of embarrassing. I mean, I wouldn't say you should have to feel embarrassed, but I would feel embarrassed in that situation. It's just kind of like you're put on the spot. There might be 90 other people in the room. That's about how many I think were in our bigger classes. So that's a little nerve-wracking, and it does motivate you though to be prepared and to do the reading. So the first semester getting used to that is intense, and I was very tired and felt kind of stressed out. But part of that was also like, I was just going all the time. Like every week, you know, we were going out at night to meet more people in our class, to get to know people. There were mixers. There was like a tradition of going out. Everybody would go to a certain bar every Thursday. Thirsty Thursday, like bar review is what they would call it. And it was so fun. It was like, honestly, it was like being in a movie like Legally Blonde. It kind of was. Maybe that sounds silly, but it just was really fun. But it was hard. But then the learning curve falls off steeply and you start to really get the hang of it and you start to even be a little full of yourself maybe by 2L and 3L. You're like, I got this. I don't even need to go to class. You know, people get that sort of mentality and I would say still go to class and everything, but it does get a lot easier in my experience. And my 3L year, I structured my final semester so that I would not have any courses that had a final exam. Oh, that's what I was kind of getting into earlier. So there isn't homework in the sense of like fill this out or prepare something. There aren't like midterms. Sometimes I feel like there were midterms. Maybe it's my memory is getting a little fuzzy, but basically your entire grade is pretty much your participation and attendance in class and your final exam, which is also nerve-wracking because it's like it's all riding on, you know, you need to be a good test taker. So that's another thing I would say. If you hate taking tests and you don't feel like you're a good test taker, you could certainly work with a coach on that ahead of time and be like, no, I want to go to law school, so I'm going to learn some skills to be a better test taker. But if that's not what you want to do with your time, you would be doing a good bit of that. So fair warning. But you take your finals at the end, and then 3L I arranged so that none of my classes had a final exam. They all had final papers, and you knew what the topic was pretty far in advance. And the reason is because I wanted to go to a friend of Grace's and my wedding in Belgium. So, I mean, a friend of Grace's from growing up, but we're both friends with her now. So I flew to Belgium during finals because I didn't have any finals. I had all final papers, which I had all written in advance. So I was done and I went to Europe and it was really fun, to be honest. So by 3L, it was like I took two spring breaks during 3L because I wanted to go on spring break with a friend who went to another school who had a different spring break. So I took that spring break and just took a week off class and just emailed all my professors like, hey, I'm going to be going out of town. And so I won't be attending class on these dates and it's not a big deal. I feel like 3L just felt like very senioritis, but it all worked out. And on that note, I will also say, I know this is a little stressful to hear, but your grades matter way more 1L than any other time. So I did not know any of this before I went to law school, which is funny because my parents are both lawyers and both started out at a big firm, like the type of firm that I'm at now. But I don't know. I just didn't know how all this worked. I never asked them, I guess. But frequently there's the path that people take is they go to law school and then they either go into the government, working for some agency of branch of the government, or they're in the criminal side, which they could either be a public defender or a prosecutor. I feel like, think it's a good bit more rare to be in private defense, private practice, criminal defense that exists, but to go right into that out of law school, I think is more rare. People become public defenders more often. And then if you're not doing any of that, then very commonly you could go the big firm route. So you might think like, oh, out of law school, you would start at a smaller firm and then work your way up to a bigger firm, but it's actually the opposite. So you go to a big firm because they have the infrastructure and the size to really handle training young associates. And so often the firms will come with representatives onto campus and interview current students to offer them a job during the summer. Sort of like an internship, but it's what is it called? Being a summer associate. Yeah. So you are often a summer associate, your second summer of law school, and then you would ideally get an offer from that job and go work at that firm after law school and spend however long you want to in theory. And then a lot of people either stay there their whole career or they move to go in-house, which is being basically an internal legal counsel for a company. You essentially just have one client, which is the company you work for, or you work at a law firm where you have many clients. And if you're in-house, then you hire outside law firms to do your legal work for you because you likely can't do it all yourself, or there's other reasons, like often in lawsuits, a company can't represent itself internally. They have to have outside counsel. Don't quote me on that because it's different in every state, but that's sort of like a rough explanation of how it works. So where was I with law school? Oh, with grades. Basically, your first semester or your first year 1L grades may be all that your ultimate employer out of law school really sees or cares about, which is wild, but that's just how it works because you interview for your second summer at the end of your first summer. So you only have grades from the first two semesters of law school. And so they see your grades, they see a writing sample, and you interview with them. And then you get a job offer for the summer after 2L. And I think you are supposed to send them your 2L grades, but assuming there isn't like a total 180 in your grades, I personally have not heard of anyone having their offer rescinded for grades, but you should certainly try to keep up your grades. And then your 3L grades, I don't remember anyone ever seeing them. I don't think my 3L grades, which were fine from what I recall, but I don't think any of those grades have ever seen the light of day because why? Nobody wanted them. Nobody asked for them. So it's just like a real difference between your 1L being kind of like very important and the hardest part of law school to 3L, which is your third year, not mattering so much. Again, I don't want to, don't go off the deep end because your employer could request your grades and they could say, hey, this shows poor judgment, you know, that you would just not care anymore. And even though what I'm describing is being more carefree, I was not caring. And I think my grades were in line with what they had been, my 1L and 2L years, but I just felt less stressed about it all. It kind of like came more naturally by then. There was something else I was going to say about grades and being applying to jobs. Oh, I was going to say the other thing that people do after law school, which I did, is working for a judge. It's called clerking. So after law school, it can be a couple years after, but it's often straight from law school. You can work for a judge, whether a state or a federal judge, and that's considered really good training. And usually law firms really like for their associates to go do that and they support it. They'll even give you a bonus when you come back oftentimes, which is cool. So starting, I think my 2L winter, I was applying to judges to go work for a judge after law school. And I was basically told how great that would be by a lot of people. And I'm glad they did because I had a really good experience. My dad clerked for a federal judge after law school and other people that I knew had other students, older students at Berkeley had, and I thought it sounded good. I wasn't really sure what I was getting into, to be honest, but people said it's the thing to do if you can do it, so you should try. And I said, okay. So I applied to judges only in LA because I really wanted to be in LA, which limited me for sure. But it all worked out. I did end up getting a clerkship with a federal district court judge. And so I worked for him for a year and that was an amazing experience. It's such a cool thing if you get to do it. You just get to see the way a court works inside and out in just kind of a different way than you would from just being at a law firm because you see how these opinions are written, the kinds of opinions in case law that you were reading in law school, you are now writing at least the first draft of, if not a final draft. So judges have young attorneys. They also sometimes have what's called a staff or a career clerk. So somebody that's a little bit more advanced in their career that works for them. But my judge only had young, like in the first few years out of law school, attorneys working for him. And it's usually a 1-year position. Sometimes it's 2 years that they want, or like 18 months or something, but mine was 1 year. So starting like the September after I graduated law school, and in between then I took the bar exam, which I can also briefly talk about, but I took, I went to work for the judge and worked for him from September to September. And it was great. He's such a good mentor. You just learn so much from your co-clerks. We got to run a trial. We got to like let the jury into the jury room every morning when they got there to get ready for trial. It's very hands-on and it's just a cool experience. I definitely recommend it, but I would say it's more uncommon than not. It's not like most people clerk. Like in my law firm, maybe like 10 to 20% of people did clerkships, I want to say, something like that. I could be off. I could be slightly off with that, but yeah, a good amount of people do clerkships. So after I did my 1 year clerkship, I went back to the law firm that I had been a summer associate at, which is the law firm where I work now. There was a little bit of a gap, which I'll explain. But first, let me talk about the bar exam, because I said I was going to describe that. So I feel like a lot of people are very afraid of the bar exam. And it's, you know, this big scary thing. Oh, you have to pass the bar and it's very intense. And it is a lot of work, but you can do it. I feel like if you can take the LSAT, get into law school, make your way through law school, you know, get a job after law school, like those things are all hard. The bar isn't this monster that's totally in a different level than any of that other stuff. And once you've mastered all of those things, you will be in good shape, I think, to do the bar. Now, you, in my opinion, absolutely have to take a prep course. I can't imagine doing it without that. I don't know anyone who did. So you take a prep class for several weeks, I guess, a couple months. You graduate usually around May, and then the bar is in July, at least in California. So yeah, you do like 2 months of studying. The best advice that I heard, which I stuck to and I think it helped me, even though it's very simple, is never break the chain of studying every day. So no days off, basically. I know that sounds intense, but I feel like it really helped me to just like eat, sleep, and breathe the bar exam and be super in that mindset. I had notes all over my apartment of like things I wanted to remember. If there was a concept that I was having trouble memorizing, I would stick a post-it note on my bathroom mirror of it and see it every day. I would make myself flashcards. I mean, it's not reinventing the wheel. It's really kind of like the tried and true study methods that, again, if you've gotten that far, if you've done well in college and done the LSAT and gotten into law school, you can do it. But it's just those tried and true, you know, study things, practice quizzes, practice, practice, practice. That's what I did for the LSAT, and for the bar was just like taking a ton of practice tests. I think that's the best thing you can do. I went to a bar class in person, which I feel like is getting more and more rare. I don't even know if they have that anymore, but if they do, I would highly recommend going in person if that works for your learning style. It definitely did for me. So I went every day to a course. I went to, I had already moved down to LA to study for the bar exam from Northern California, and they were offering at Loyola Law School. Wow, that's kind of hard to say. At Loyola, they had a bar class. So you didn't have to be a student there, but if you had signed up for the bar review class, then you could go in person. So in the morning, I would go, I think it was from like 8 a.m. to noon, and I would take the class, and then I would pack a lunch, and I would go to the Loyola Law Library, which I guess was open to the public. It seemed, I don't know, I don't remember the details, but I was, I guess, allowed to be in there. And so I went to the library, and then I would take practice tests and study the rest of the afternoon, basically. So it is a full-time job. I guess I'm making it sound maybe worse than it is, but you don't have anything else going on, because pretty much without fail, with some exceptions, but pretty much your employment after law school does not start until the fall, because everyone knows that you need to take the bar exam over the summer. So you kind of think of it as like, I have a full-time job. And with that in mind, I didn't feel that stressed, because I was like, I worked my full-time job today and I get to take a break to have dinner and watch a TV show just like I would if I was working any other full-time job. So I still did fun things. I had my birthday over the summer. There was Pride. I still celebrated those things. But I did make sure every day, even on weekends, to at least do 5 flashcards or something. Never break the chain. That's what somebody told me. It worked for me. And I was nervous and it was intense, but I ate really well around the test. The test started at 8 a.m., I believe. And every morning I would wake up at 5, which maybe sounds counterintuitive. Why would I wake up so early? But I would wake up at 5 so that I could really be fully awake by 8. Like, I had already been up for a couple hours. I'd eaten a really good breakfast. I had gone for a walk. I had gotten to the test center plenty early and just like really, you know, relaxed and got found my seat and all of that. Nothing to be stressed about. I always brought everything they said you could bring, you know, water, anything else. I would have it all ready. And yeah, I know somebody that had an earthquake happen during their bar exam. So wild things do happen. Be prepared, but you can do it. Okay, so my career path, I'll keep this pretty brief because I don't want this episode to be super long. But I clerked after law school. Then I went to a big law firm where I had been a summer associate. So I already knew people there. I'd had a great experience as a summer. I enjoyed it. And they do a lot of media and entertainment work and IP work, which is what I was interested in. It's what I still do. So I was excited to go back and I had a great experience. I was there for a year. I was not expecting to be there for only a year, but an unusual opportunity fell into my lap to go work for a different firm that is much smaller and that specializes in media law very specifically. So that's really all they do. And this was through a family friend, essentially. So I had a personal connection there and I went and worked there for 3 years. I had a great experience there. I didn't necessarily expect to stay there for 3 years or any length of time. I was just going with the flow for a while. And then after 3 years, for many reasons, but a lot of it was I really missed having any peers because I didn't have really anyone else sort of at my level. Everyone else had many years of experience on me, decades of experience on me. And I had a lot of friends still at my old firm, including people I had gone to law school with who went to the same firm as me after school. And I decided to go back to my old firm, which I would have never predicted, but they were interested in having me back. They welcomed me with open arms, and now I've been there for 3 years. So I've jumped around. I'm really happy with how my career path has gone. Like I said, I focus on content, media, and entertainment law. It's interesting. I work with great people. I would say the best part of my job is getting to read and write for my work. I love writing, and that's always been one of my strengths in academic settings and work settings. So I get to write all the time. It's cool. It's a good use of my skills. I like to stretch my brain in that way. I like to be cozy and like get set up in front of my computer and just hunker down with work. Like that works really well for my emotional and mental and academic kind of brain. I do have meetings and stuff, but I know friends who are TV writers and they're in a writer's room and all day they're with people bouncing off ideas the entire workday. That would be really hard for me and draining. I like to have my alone time while I work, and I feel like as a lawyer, at least my kind of lawyer, you definitely get to do that. The worst part of my job, definitely for me, is dealing with opposing counsel who can be really challenging and sometimes rude. I feel like the people I work with are generally kind, or I don't know why I said generally. They're across the board very kind and great people to work with, but unfortunately, that's not always the case. Other places where you may be opposing counsel, which means they represent the other party in the lawsuit. I get really stressed out. I really don't like people yelling at me on the phone, even though I know it's not personal and I have not done anything wrong myself. They just are unhappy with what our client is doing or whatever. And yeah, that's the worst part of the job. I don't like that at all, but it has to be done. And sometimes it is almost cathartic to like let out your snappiest comments, but I always keep it polite because that is another piece of advice I'll give you. There is never a reason to be yelling at somebody in that circumstance. And if you keep it classy and when they go low, you go high, that will always serve you well. So I would definitely recommend that. That's my philosophy. Let me think if there's anything else. I would do it all again, pretty much the same, I think, if I had to redo this. I wouldn't want to do it all again because talking through all of this, I'm like, wow, that was a lot of work, actually. That was a lot of steps. But when you're in it, it doesn't feel like that. It's just the path that you're on. But it does make me proud, actually, to look back and talk through everything. It's an interesting career. It's something that I feel like carries a lot of baggage sometimes, which I don't love, actually. That may be why I don't talk on Instagram or this podcast very much about being a lawyer, because whenever people are like, oh, what do you do? And I'm like, oh, I'm a lawyer. They're like, oh, wow. And they have all these questions. And that's very nice. There's nothing wrong with that. But it carries certain connotations. I think I don't at all get offended by lawyer jokes. I know people always have little jokes about how lawyers are like kind of evil, or I don't know. People have different viewpoints on it. And I'm perfectly happy with my choices and my career. And I don't think I'm evil. I don't, thankfully, I feel good about the people I represent. I think it'd be hard to sleep at night if you had to represent people that were bad in various ways. But that said, I really believe everyone deserves a good lawyer. And the reason why is the system has to work that way. I don't work in the criminal context at all, but like, let's say in the criminal context, oh, well, how could you sleep at night defending somebody who did something terrible? And it's like, well, that is challenging, but they actually need good counsel, because if they don't, if they have ineffective assistance of counsel and they don't have a good lawyer, or their lawyer intentionally messes something up, then the case could be thrown out. And the hard work of the person that is making sure a, you know, bad killer or whatever gets the justice, you know, somebody that's helping to bring justice, all their hard work would be undone if the other side didn't have good counsel, because that's part of our Constitution, is everybody has the right to representation in that circumstance. So yeah, I think who you represent doesn't mean it aligns with your own morals, and that's okay. But thankfully, that's not something that I have to really grapple with on a daily basis, because I really like the people that we represent for the most part. I mean, I keep saying like generally or for the most part. I don't mean there's exceptions in my mind. I'm just making a broad statement about my job. Okay, I think I will leave it at that. I hope that that was helpful or interesting. If you listen this long, you probably have some interest in the legal world, or maybe you're just driving and you can't easily turn this off and you're like, this got boring a while ago. But thank you for the question. Those of you who on my Instagram stories asked about this part of my life, it was interesting to share a bit about it, and we'll be back next week. Maybe just me, maybe me and Grace. Unsure, but we will be back. Thanks. Bye.